Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Session Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, the big dance is on. We're talking about the federal election that's coming up. And look, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with one of the candidates for the seat of Leichhardt. And he's the Greens candidate for Leichhardt, and that's Philip Musumeci.
Yes.
Thank you very much for correcting me. Philip, my apologies. Philip Musumeci. So who is Philip Musumeci?
Well, he's a guy who grew up in Mirrawinni.
Yes.
Went to school there and Babinda and Innisfail, and eventually went off and did engineering in Townsville and Canberra. My grandfather came here after World War One, and I'm a mix of Scottish and a bit of Irish and maybe some other threads there that we really should explore, plus half Italian.
Fruit salad.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I do tell people my brother, my sister, and myself were given only one piece of advice when we were growing up as far as what we would do for a living, and that was do not become a farmer.
There you go.
That was the absolute limit. Anything was okay.
And you come from a farmer background.
Absolutely. So it was an informed piece of advice. I've done a few different jobs, but over the years I've probably done a little bit more engineering than I have working in the university area. Have done engineering while based in Canberra and working in Ingham on a sugar mill. And
yes.
That was my first project after I finished my final degree in engineering.
Yeah.
And in the same year as the pilot strike. So that was a very interesting year for remote work.
Gotcha, exactly. Greyhound City it was, catching buses everywhere.
And Hercules. And really.
Yes, thank you.
All kinds of aeroplanes. I've worked in the print industry, developing and exporting printers. A bit of work in sugar mills, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
I had a fly-in, fly-out contract, this time living in Cairns, but working on a mountain in the ACT on space junk lasers.
Space junk lasers.
Yes. So that was just the reverse of what I'd been doing for commuting. And now I work for a navigation company. We make and sell devices that let trucks and cranes navigate when they're driving by themselves.
Okay. So here you are through your hat and political arena for the seat of Leichhardt for the up-and-coming federal election. Greens candidate. Now, the gentleman who's sitting in the Leichhardt seat for the last 20-odd years, Mr. Warren Inch, is stepping down. So there's a free game there in regarding free opportunity for candidates. Now you're up against Tweedledee and Tweedledum regarding the big two major parties.
Yes, we
coming
have
in as a Greens candidate. First of all, why are you running, Philip?
Let me just say I am running for the second time. I'm still concerned about integrity like I was 3 years ago. We do now have a National Commission Against Corruption at the federal level, and that's a reasonable start. We've still got those integrity issues now popping up in the way our elections are going to be run, because about a month ago, maybe a little bit more now, the two big parties actually voted together to restrict the funding and really the access of independents running in the federal sphere. So small parties and independents will now find it much harder to organise their funding. And the limits are very generous for big parties and somewhat restrictive for individuals. It's actually harder for the independents. That's the really annoying thing, actually.
So they virtually won a two-horse race.
Yeah, they're trying to lock it in. And I think it's a very poor decision by them.
Mm.
It's not ethically sound. I think that elsewhere in society there's been a lack of collaboration in the way we do things federally.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have parties with majorities in both houses, for example, there's very little debate in Parliament. So this idea of making it harder for independents to get in actually means we'll have there'll be less requirement for a debate in Parliament.
Mm.
At the moment, we've got some independents and Greens holding the balance of power in the Senate, and things actually get discussed. You can actually run a Senate inquiry like the Greens triggered last year on supermarket price gouging.
Yes,
you know that came out that came about because there were essentially people with their heart in the right place,
mm.
including independents, and they ran that inquiry, and it's had a few really good effects since. Sorry, I'm wondering off your reason running.
No, that's fine. Please paint the picture. No, you keep talking.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, that inquiry, for example, made it apparent about how difficult it was to actually afford good food in remote communities, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Labor government, to their credit, put out a proposal that they're going to try and subsidise, I think, fresh food in some remote communities, and that'll make a big difference.
Sure.
And while the Greens would like to take some credit for that, in a way, it's because we had the Senate with no single party having a majority.
Mm.
That just causes a better level of debate. Obviously, I would like that to happen in the lower house as well.
Mm.
And if I'm allowed to just sing my own party's song for a bit. Yeah.
Please, by all means, yes.
You know, one of the things that we did in the last parliament when there was a lower house set of independents and Greens holding the balance of power was we got Medicare adjusted to include dental health for children. So 18 years and younger throughout Australia have access to Medicare for dental care. And while it was a bigger change in some states than others, because different states all did slightly different things in this field, and some states did none, some territories probably did none, that change made a big difference to the beginning of a child's life. You know, if we end up with balance of power again or some way to wrestle with whoever is the government, we'll be trying to get that across all age groups.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at it from the point of view, we've done it for young people. If we do it for elderly as well, we're looking after people at the towards the latter part of their life.
Sure.
When bad teeth, for example, can mean a very low quality of life if you're not able to chew and eat good food.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know, there's some really it's funny, but dental
and
care.
And the social part of it as well, communicating with people.
Yeah, actually. You know. I mean, it just covers – it's funny, but the beginning and the end, dental care is really important.
Mm.
You don't think about this until you're getting a bit older, I might add.
Sure.
But anyway, that's how
you don't have to brush all your teeth, just the ones you want to keep.
Right. Thanks for the information.
No, exactly. So, yeah, you're running for the seat of Leichhardt, for the Greens candidate. What are things that you'd like to do if get elected?
Yeah, it's a very hard thing to answer, but look, there are some disturbing differences in quality of life, and for that matter, length of life,
yes,
in this electorate. So, yes, there are certain things you might do for industries that tend to affect the Cairns area, for example. But when you look further north, there are certain economic opportunities that you'd want to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that all of the main party candidates look at that.
Look at that, yes.
Yeah. But then there's also ideas of how can you untap better economic opportunity for, say, people all over Cape York.
Mm.
And that might mean, for example, you're going to have a chat to the mayor of Kawanyama, who works a little bit with Jamie Gain in Weeper.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see them suggesting that there's things they can do, for example, in the arts industry sector that might tap into entrepreneurship.
Sure.
And by the way, that's an entrepreneurial drive coming out of people there.
Yes.
You know, right? It's not something coming from outside. And when I talk to other
folks... But it creates a platform as such.
And as well, there's maybe there's a product or an outcome that's going to lead to economic independence, and they've got confidence that it can work.
Mm.
But there are other areas of the Cape where essentially the amount of control people have in what they can do is limited. And it might be that these people are, if you like, got stewardship of some important pieces of land.
Mm.
How they might be able to improve their economic well-being,
yes,
it's not so clear-cut. In fact, it's very restrictive at the moment.
Mm.
In fact, one thing I would mention, this is a Greens thing, not coming directly from me, is that we're now proposing that there ought to be a review and refresh of the Native Title Act. And I would call it a gentle suggestion now, because it's one of these suggestions that you put it in the air for maybe two or three election cycles, make sure it doesn't trigger strange fear campaigns, which I can remember back in the early 90s, by the way.
Sure.
But there might be opportunity there where after about 30 years, we look at how it's turned out. When that Act came into being, really we had no, as a country, we had no experience of really what was going to happen.
None whatsoever, exactly.
It was all just new. And in a way, it's, when you look at, say, the Yes campaign a few years ago, it's remarkable how that actually did, in the end, settle via court action and settle into a piece of legislation that I think was a good start, all other things considered. Well, 30 years down the track, why wouldn't we calmly and without too much disinformation have some kind of review? Now, that if there is going to be a review, it's going to have to be because the people on the Cape and elsewhere in the country.
People got to have a say in the matter.
Well, I think actually they're going to have to drive it. We're putting it on our platform.
Okay, yep, yep.
But I'm sure that Dorinda Cox, who's our senator, probably driving this in the end.
Okay.
You know, her view will be a long-term one, but it's like staking an intention, I guess.
And you're talking about mention of First Nation people. Well, we also talk about climate change, where we've got some dramas in the Torres Straits and regarding seawalls.
Yes.
You know, very important space there. And it's talk about protecting of islands and communities and people, of course. What's your thought there in regarding seawalls?
I did check out just recently I did read a status report. It might have been from Infrastructure Australia, but I'm not sure about it. It said that the third stage of joint Queensland government, federal government government funding was in place for that. So I think that covers the current piece of work through to its completion, which I guess is a year and a half to 2 years. I'm not sure exact timing there. But more generally, I was a sponsor of the Two Uncles case when it kicked off.
Yes.
So I actually get little updates like we do. And we got one on the anniversary of the 40th anniversary of the Torres Strait Treaty. A lady called Macrose Ilu sent everybody who'd contributed a little update. So I am aware of that case.
Yes.
Greens, of course, were speaking out in favour of that case. I think that case is going to be important. But if worse comes to worse and there's not a long-term solution that can be driven by that case, one slight glimmer of hope is that Senator Pocock, the independent from the ACT, has a duty of care bill that he's intending to put into Parliament next year. And that's another offshoot of the Grata-funded court cases. There were those four young girls who ran a case about 3 or 4 years ago to try and get the environment minister to actually pay attention to their future needs when she made decisions.
Sure.
And and they won, and the minister appealed, and then the children lost, which was rather sad that the minister would actually
appeal it. Exactly.
But this new bill
for young people speaking about their future, who are going to be our future Australians.
And I mean, that problem on the Cape is you can see there's a long-term element there.
That's right, Philip.
Which we're not dealing with at the moment.
Look, also talking about, when we talk about remote, when we talk about the Cape, we talk about distance. We're talking about shopping and education and training and all the above. Remote comes with all those problems.
Yeah. Well,
and the cost of living in remote areas.
Yeah, we probably can handle those separately, although they've got the same problem, really. But
yes.
Well, I was visiting Weipa last week, as it turns out, and bought my own airfares, and there's a little experience for you.
You can compare
those airfares to, say, going to Bali.
Yes.
I think actually Bali is cheaper.
It's cheaper.
I haven't been to Bali, but it looks cheaper to me. So, you know, there's that tyranny of distance popping up.
Yep.
But I got a couple of ideas on that. The first one, of course, is that there are places like WIPA which absolutely have to keep on keeping on.
Mm.
That's our health and education hub, and I guess it's the only place in Queensland where we've got state schools that have boarding. Mm. So it's really critical.
Yes.
And I guess up at the tip, again, we've got an area where there's health and education unique services available. So I think those places are safe in the sense that I don't believe governments will ever undo what we've got so far. But as usual, more needs to be done. And when you look at, say, you can look at various services across the Cape and housing, for example. You can look at stats on cross Queensland appropriate housing levels. You can look at stats on the Cape, and there's vast differences. So things like how we improve housing, how we maintain, and I guess in the end improve health and education, they're always going to be important.
Yes.
You're probably thinking about actual costs of moving heavy stuff onto the Cape. Here's an idea that I think is probably going to take hold. I think that with the turmoil overseas in defence, for example, in the value of treaties, I think that's going to trigger a more self-reliant Australia.
Mm.
And that makes me believe that, and certainly this is a Greens policy now, we think that self-reliance, where we try to protect our coastline, is very, very important. So roads like the Peninsula Development Road essentially take on a very important defence role.
Mm-hmm,
and there are certain facilities in WIPA which are unique, and they will require, I believe, a better road access. So as far as the southwest of the northern part of this part of Queensland goes, there's probably a likely other reason for improving road transport. But up on the tip, I think in the end the heavy stuff is still going to be ship-based. And
yes.
That's any changes there have to be very carefully thought out. I know that some of the parties are suggesting that Queensland Government Enterprises shouldn't be doing the shipping, but and that they should be moved across to competitive private enterprises.
Private enterprises, exactly.
But the trouble with that is that we've had private enterprise before, and it's very hard for them to keep going.
One horse and a race there.
But if you have two horses, each horse is now less.
Sure, exactly. And yeah. it shares a cost.
So it's really,
affordable.
Makes it harder.
Mm.
So it's a tricky problem. So
I
think if any change is implemented, people had be really, they'd have to be really careful about what they're asking for there.
For our daily listeners out there, just tuned in, Trevor Tim here, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Having a yarn here with Philip Mushamisi, the Greens candidate for Leichhardt. We got, of course, in the Greens, we're talking about renewable energy. I mean, that's got to be a thumbs up and a plus in the areas that you guys are working in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's come in handy in the Cape.
Yes. I think that the rapidly decreasing price of renewable energy components is going to make standalone systems more affordable.
Yes.
Actually, I would like to just go sideways just slightly there.
Yes.
When I was in WIPA, I got to hear a report from the CEO, I guess, up there, and he was talking about how the mine looks almost certainly continuing for another 20 years. They haven't quite locked in some of their investment funding, but it's essentially locked in. And by the way, there were some pretty interesting diversity and inclusion stats coming out of that mine, but we can talk about that later. But at the same time, I know down in Gladstone, there's now been a 5-year transition contract signed for the Boyne smelter.
Mm.
It's going totally renewable.
Okay.
Now, what that means is that that product from WIPA will go down to Gladstone. It'll become, I was going to say, the first green metal export from Australia, but it's probably the second because I think there is a refinery in Tassie that's got hydropower doing it.
All heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and that says to me that we are going to see business leading the way, even though government ought to be leading the way, but there's going to be a very, very large company leading the way there. And so anyone running arguments about renewables will have to be a little bit more careful with some of the misinformation they're spruiking, because that company is not—it's not a charity. I mean, it's got to make a profit,
and their
investment decision is a real thing based on reality.
Sure.
So that's a very good indicator. But yeah, we're pretty keen on renewables on the Cape.
Mm.
I know that there are some efforts up on the TI area. Look, I think it was TI, but I remember seeing a proposal 3 or 4 years ago where people were actually trying to change over some of their four-wheel drives to use
electric vehicles.
Look, I don't think they were electric, but it was a low-carbon option.
Okay. Yep.
There are little things happening already.
Working the space. Mm. So for our listeners out there, how do people get in touch with you, Philip, if they want to have a yarn with you? If you're running for the seat of Leichhardt, people want to converse what you offer and walk a mile in your shoe, how do they get in touch with you?
Look, they can track me down on the Greens candidate website. There is a Facebook candidate website as well.
Mm.
I am happy to do, basically I'm happy to do Google conference calls at any time.
Yep.
I've been trying to trigger people to hook in on Thursday nights. No success so far, but I really just run them whenever it suits people.
Yes.
Am I able to just think about anything else I should talk about? Or?
No, look, that's fantastic. Let the people reach out to you. A good yarn here. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Please do keep in touch. Enjoy the journey. That's what it's all about, Philip. And if you get in, great. If you don't get in, great anyway. The fact that you're putting your hat up, putting your hand up, putting your hat in the ring.
Yeah, we like to raise people's awareness.
Yes.
We like to tick off those long-term goals. Other parties might have more of a short-term focus, but we are trying to get the discussions going in the right direction.
Sure.
And not just me, all the candidates.
Well, looking into the future. Mm. They say a jet aeroplane don't have a vision mirrors, eh? There it is. Philip, nice talking with you. Nice meeting you. You take care. Keep in touch and we'll yarn soon, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you. So there it is, Philip Mushamisi, the Green candidate for Leichhardt. And so if you want to have a chat to the lad, check the Greens webpage out. Have a yarn and look, talking about all stuff in the Leichhardt area, and that's Cape York, Torres Strait Island. And we're talking about First Nation people, we're talking about farmers, we're talking about miners, all the above there. So a lot of work to be done in that space. And after Mr. Warren Inch stepping down after 30-odd years, we're going to have a new person sitting in their seat, and it may be the Greens candidate. There you go. Have you seen Yana Strong? Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
What is greatness?
It's doing what makes you feel proud. What feels right for right now.
When you can study hands-on, all in, practical, professional,
personal. When you can learn local and give back to your community, you define your greatness. Find support of teachers who are there for you at TAFE Queensland. Make great happen. RTO 0275.
Station sponsor.
First Nations Connect is Telstra's phone line and service centre for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander customers. You can call our friendly team on 1800 444 403 if you have any questions about your Telstra phone or internet plan. Or visit telstra.com and search First Nations Connect. That's 1800 444 403 and telstra.com. Search First Nations Connect.
Station sponsor.
National Talk Black. National Talk Black.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have your say, Nyan Upstrong, 1-800-422-416. All right, and Stronger Together, Bilby Conservation, efforts enhanced by Indigenous knowledge. One of the nation's most iconic and at-risk critters could benefit by combining Indigenous knowledge with Western survey methods, according to a new study led by Charles Darwin University. In collaboration with Northern Territory Tanami Rangers and traditional owners from the community of Lajamanu. So with that, we're going to catch up a yarn with Hayley Gale, study lead research from CDU Research Institute for Environment and Livelihoods on the line. Hayley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So first of all, we're talking about Bilby. So explain to us, please, to our listeners who may not know what a Bilby is.
Yeah, so Bilbies are a small Australian marsupial. They're very shy little animals. They've got big ears like a rabbit, a long pointy nose and a long tail with really strong claws for digging. So they're burrowing animals. They create these quite complicated burrow systems.
Mm-hmm.
So they live mostly in the desert. They come out at night to find food like insects and seeds. And they're a really important part of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
So by doing all of that digging and turning over the soil, they help keep it healthy.
Yes.
They're also a really important cultural animal. So there's more than 60 different local Indigenous names for the bilby across the country.
Okay. So how did the realisation come about the combining Indigenous knowledge with Western survey methods could benefit the bilby?
Yeah, so rangers and scientists have been working together for a really long time on bilby conservation. And we noticed really early in our project that we do get way better results when we combine our skills and our knowledge. So Indigenous rangers and traditional owners know what they're looking for when it comes to bilbies. So they know how to find their tracks, their burrows and the shapes of their diggings. And that's because they've grown up learning about country and know these landscapes really, really well. So when we bring that knowledge in together with the science, we get a clearer picture of where the bilbies are living and also how they're doing.
So this probably leads up to my next question. Why was the collaboration specifically with the Northern Tanami Rangers and traditional owners from the community of Lamananu?
Yeah, so the traditional owners from Lajamanu have got a really strong cultural tie to the bilby.
Yes,
so
yes.
They're part of stories, ceremony and lore. And so it made sense for us to work with people who know the land best and who care deeply about protecting the bilbies for future generations. So they also still live in lots of other parts of the Northern Territory in the deserts. And we've been working with some of the other ranger groups across that area as well.
Good, look, fantastic. And then, and how exactly is the surveying done?
Yeah, so for this particular study, we were really interested in collecting bilby scats or bilby poo. And that's because we can actually extract DNA from those samples, which can tell us a lot about how bilbies are doing, how healthy they are, how many there are, and how related they are to other bilbies within the population. So we used a couple of different methods to find bilby poo. The first one was really based on those science methods. So that involved going out and searching the bush, trying to cover as much area as we could. So we were walking in straight lines, more or less, through the bush looking for scats. The second one was based on the skills and knowledge of the master trackers. So Walpri refer to them as Kuyupungu. And so this involved following bilby tracks to burrows and diggings, which is where we usually find that scat.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what it meant using both of those approaches was that we were able to collect a lot more samples. So we had a lot more data to work with. And we actually found way more samples using those tracking methods that were based on the TO's knowledge. So that gave us way better results and led to better estimates of bilby population numbers.
And what would be the predators for the bilbies?
What was that one, sorry?
What would be the predators for the bilbies?
So the main ones are foxes and cats.
Okay.
So those introduced ones, you know, you do get a few birds of prey and things taking them, but the cats and foxes are the biggest issues.
Sure. So, look, it's a great joint venture regarding working with traditional owners as well. A fantastic partnership, you could say. And then the importance of respecting and keeping the bilbies alive and running in their environment.
Yeah, definitely. So the traditional owners and the rangers are the ones that know this country best, so really important to keep working with them and making sure that we're valuing their knowledge and what they can add to these conservation programs.
So how long has this been running for, this conjunction here with the Indigenous rangers? And how will
we've been working in the Northern Territory for about 6 years now in total, and I've been working with them for the last 4 years.
Fantastic.
So, and we've got many plans to continue working together over the next few years as well.
So it shows a nice partnership and, like I said, the knowledge from the Indigenous mob, of course, and then scientific knowledge. It's a good fit, isn't it?
It is indeed, you know, it's really, really has many mutual benefits, both for the science and the research that we're doing and also for the people that are out there doing all this wonderful work out on country.
So you find bilbies close to the centre of Australia as well?
So not so much in the centre anymore. They're sort of contracted more northwards.
Okay.
So we get them up at a similar sort of level to where Tennant Creek is.
Yes.
There's a few around Tennant Creek. But we don't really see them very often further south of there, and we think that that's mostly because of the foxes. So less foxes in the north means more bilbies.
Fantastic. So, Hayley, then the numbers are good regarding bilbies?
We're still trying to work that one out.
Okay.
So this is just sort of the first step. We've got a little population estimate for this local area, but we want to do that more broadly. So we don't really have a good understanding yet of how many there are left in the wild. So that's the next step.
Okay, fantastic. Well, team effort. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best. We'll keep in touch, my dear Hayley. Thank you very much for the yarn. All the best for the traditional owners there, and keep up the good work.
No worries. Thanks so much, Trevor.
Take care, Hayley. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A deadly yarn there. That's Hayley Gale, her name is, our study lead research from CDU Research Institute for Environment and Livelihoods, and talking about the bilby conservation efforts enhanced by Indigenous knowledge. So working together closely with the Indigenous traditional owners there on land, and that's working with the North Tanami Rangers and traditional owners from the community of the Lajamanu. So look, fantastic and great effort. Been running for about 5 years now, 6 years and 5 years that Hayley Gale has been working with them, so it is great. So efforts there, protecting and looking after our land and our country, and plus the animals that live in the environment on our lands and country. Too deadly. Have you seen Yana Strong here, National Talk Black? Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Call that number. Yana, viewers, truly Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumbarrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have you say your mob, yarn up strong, National Talk Black.
listening to National Talk Black.
Oh, me. Me.
National Talk Black.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country, BBM Bunbury Bip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now we have Beyond Blue and AIMS Australia join forces to improve mental health support for diverse communities. Migrant and refugee communities will have better access to culturally appropriate mental health support thanks to a new partnership between Beyond Blue and settlement agency AIMS Australia. With that, I'm going to catch up a yarn with Dr. Luke Martin, clinical spokesperson and psychologist from Beyond Blue, on the line. We have Dr. Luke. Good morning, Dr. Luke. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, Joint Forces, there we are, joint in conjunction with AIMS Australia, Beyond Blue. So working to protect, improve mental health support for diverse communities, migrant refugee communities. So this is a great togetherness and supporting our migrant and our refugee communities in the mental health sector, yes?
That's exactly right. You know, AIMS has been supporting, you know, newly arrived migrants and refugees for, I think, about 75 years.
Sure.
Beyond Blues, you know, we've been supporting people around their mental health for around 25 years. So bringing our experience together to really look after the mental health of, you know, multicultural communities, with a particular focus on, you know, people who are just settling into Australia and trying to, to start a new life here, because we know that transition to a new country can come with, you know, a lot of stress and adjustment, and it can put some really unique pressures on your mental health. So this partnership is really about, you know, how do we let you know, all communities know about the supports that are available, and to know that it's okay to reach out for them if you need some support with your mental health.
And when you look at Dr. Luke, as you just pointed out, moving to another country, it can be daunting in so many ways, especially in the cultural aspect side of things. Maybe losing their culture, but also adapting to the new culture, the Australian way, you could say. Yep.
Exactly right. And I think a lot of people feel that they can be caught between two worlds sometimes, the culture they've come from their country of origin, into the Australian culture, and trying to figure out, you know, how things work here. Often trying to learn the language can be a real barrier to that. So
yes,
the work of AIMS in helping people learn English is so important. But there's also those things around, you know, you might be, you know, need to find a new job, which can come if you're used to working in a certain job in your last country, and you come to Australia and you're not able to work in that job anymore. It can take, you know, a big adjustment around your identity and even your self-worth. So there's just so many things that go into this transition that can be hard and stressful for people. And we know that, you know, multicultural communities do have lower rates of help seeking for their mental health than the general population. And so this is really an initiative to try and, you know, encourage, you know, higher rates of support seeking, because it is a really hard transition.
And when you're talking about mental health, I would like to think, and as a First Nation person, that racism comes to the table as well in that space.
We really sadly we do hear that as well. That experience of racism and discrimination can be part of that experience, and we know that there are really direct impacts to your mental health when you receive that kind of unfair or hateful treatment. It's you know, there's really no place for it, and it does impact on people's mental health. So that's part of this as well. And so, you know, we know that when people are able to find, you know, the support they need, either from their network, their community, or through professionals, they're better able to cope with some of the really hard things that life throws at us. And that's, you know, why Beyond Blue is really, you know, excited to be part of this conversation as well.
So we talk about, like, First Nation people, we talk about closing gaps. There's a gap here, isn't there, in regarding our migrant and our refugee communities, in regarding the mental health support, yes?
That's exactly right. And the barriers that exist in accessing that support are largely kind of system barriers. It's you know, how do we help people know what's available? How do we help people, you know, who haven't quite got the hang of English yet, to navigate those barriers so they can, you know, the system that we have around our mental health is complex for people that have lived here their entire lives. And so learning it new is even harder. So there are these systemic barriers that we can overcome, because the need is not any less. Like, I think multicultural communities have a need for mental health support, but they're not reaching out for that support as often as they need to. Or if they do, often it's when things are at a real crisis point, and they might be turning up
in
the emergency department or at the hospital. It escalates. And so we're really keen to try to reach out earlier and as soon as possible. If someone's experiencing those early signs of concern, you know, just sending that message that it's okay to talk to someone. And I think for people who have come from different cultures, sometimes it can be about explaining that we have helplines that you can call to talk to someone, and it's okay to do that. You can talk to your GP about how you're feeling, not just your physical ailments. So
exactly.
Some of it's a little bit of education in that sense as well.
So Fantastic. And so for our migrants and refugee brothers and sisters out there, who would they contact if they're needing that support? What's the get-go? What's the start of the process if that's the case?
Yeah, the simplest first step is really to give us a call at Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, where you can have a chat about what's going on for you, and you will receive some counselling in the moment, as well as be given a bit of an action plan for what you can do to get on top of things again. And, you know, we always speak about, you know, it's never too early to give us a call. You don't need to wait until things have built up to a real crisis point.
Well, fantastic. And we have a national program here, so thank you very much for your yarn, a very important yarn, Dr. Luke, and just educating and supporting and directing our migrants and refugee brothers and sisters out there. There is support, there is help. And starting with giving Beyond Blue a call, 1300 22 4636. Thank you for your yarn. Please keep in touch. It's great that joined forces there with AIMS Australia and to improve mental health for support for diverse communities. Thank you, Dr. Luke, and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor. All the best to you too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that. Bye.
Deadly yarn there, beautiful yarn. Dr. Luke Martin, clinical spokesperson and psychologist from Beyond Blue, and talking about the Beyond Blue and AIMS Australia joined forces to improve mental health support for diverse communities. Once again, that deadly number, 1300 22 4636. All your brothers and sisters out there, migrant and refugee communities, make that phone call if you need support or help or guidance, direction in moving to a new country and in support of you know, keeping your culture alive and also learning the ways of the culture of the Big Island, Australia. There it is. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong, National Talk Black? Daily number here, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yarn. It's yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, one-hour program here live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on your dingy country. BBM Bummer Bip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong, National Talk Black?